This is Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
What a play!
Can you believe this?
No, I can't.
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
Off to the races, and he stays on his feet.
This is going to go the distance.
Now, here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, and Heath.
It's mailbag time, yes! Really excited for today's show. Adam Azer here with Jamie Eisenberg and the cockiest man on the face of the earth, Dan Schneier, because it's 6 days until tennis, and that means Dan becomes a total jerk. So welcome to the show, Jerk Face Dan.
Listen, Adam, I was thinking about it. This is the last mailbag before the match, and I was thinking about it a little bit. Just the last time we played, I have no respect for your game. I really don't. I was thinking about how you played. Your serve, your weak backhands that barely make it to midcourt.
Real big talking about a serve. You couldn't get your serve in.
Well, what ended up happening was you played me on my worst day of tennis in probably the last 4 years and still lost the practice match 6-4, which is really a sign of things to come.
6-4.
But I just have no respect of what you put out there on the court. Everything you hit was to midcourt. You put so little pace. You asked me, I played so bad. And I was like, I can't play well. When my opponent generates no pace with the way that you generate, you somehow regressed from a pace standpoint. You're weaker. You can't get your shots past midcourt. And I thought about it and I was like, I know this guy thinks he can win this year because he got 4 games in the practice set and he got 4 games in the second set of last year, even though we're 24-6 overall in our four sets.
I have so little
respect for your game that I'm willing to make some wagers today. And these are wagers that I'll actually do, not like your, I'll put 3 lines in my head, but my wife has 17 important phone calls and I can never find time to do it. Or the recent Heath bet that we all know you're not going to go through with because I put a poll out there on Twitter.
No,
and I asked the people, do you think Adam will go
through? He got a way out of it.
He found a way out of it.
No. Heath had a flaw in his bet.
So who technically found that? Adam's lawyer? Like what?
No,
how did
I
that
saw somebody
about?
Posted on Twitter on X. I apologize for not referencing who it was. But the Giants could be eliminated week 2, right? In theory? not in theory, but by October, right?
Maybe.
The bet is Devontae Smith versus Zay Flowers for the season. So even if the Giants are eliminated from playoff contentions, which is what Keith said, we don't know the winner of the bet until week 18.
Right.
So Adam may get week 18 through the draft of beer, which is still awful.
But here's the thing.
Like, and you can't touch it, by the way. No trimming.
What I don't understand is like I've got an important event that I have to take a lot of pictures for. I have to look good. They're going to last forever. My niece's bat mitzvah. I don't want to look like a loser with this stupid beard. That's in January.
How do you know you won't look better with a grown-out beard? Hold on.
Why can't I just do it after January? From the day after that event until the Giants pick in late April in the NFL draft, there's going to be plenty of time for me to grow a stupid, itchy, ugly, hideous, horrible beard. I don't need to do it from December on. Like it's just stupid. There is no reason why I can't lose that bet, pay up that part of it, but still look good for a family function.
The chat really sums it up because you made the bet. You made the bet as is, Adam. You want to talk about I'm cocky. You were cocky when you made that bet. And now the rooster comes. I don't even know what the term is, but you have to come through with this thing.
Fine. You know what? No, I'm
and
not
I still want to
no,
see
I'm
the three lines too, by the way. That's not over.
I already did that, you idiot. I am so sick of this three lines crap. What is wrong with everyone? I see it in the stupid chat. I hear from stupid ass Dan. Shut up about the three lines. Will you stop? I already shaved the three lines. Enough with the damn three lines. For the last freaking time, I already shaved them. I shaved them like 2 years ago. Stop bringing it up. I already did.
This really feels like a situation where if the bear you know what's in the woods, it actually happened and no one's there to hear it.
I did it. I showed everyone.
He did do it.
It happened.
All right.
He did do it. Jeez. I think if I were Heath, I would let you go to the family function
without
the beard.
No. I'll talk to Heath. That's unacceptable.
But here's the thing, you have to go
with the bad beard to the family function.
No, I'm not doing that.
That's part of the bet.
When is the family function?
It's sometime in January. I don't know. It's disrespectful to my family.
No, you need to know the date because the date matters. I'll find out the date,
but it's
because when does week 18 end?
Look, we got to get to the show here.
We got to get to the show, but more importantly, we got to get to this. Donate to Draftathon, help our cause with St. Jude, and come up with ways for this bet to evolve. Me and Adam, tennis match next week. I am so disgusted that he thinks he can beat me, given how poor his game is. No backhand. Can't lob a backhand over me when I'm at the net. Every shot is so weak from him. I can't generate pace because he can't generate pace.
And so I don't even care what
the listener said last year. Oh, Dan, you're hitting so soft. I don't care. My strategy this year is I don't care how it looks. I'm just going to win every point, every game,
Dan,
as much as I can. So here's what I want from the listeners to raise money for St. Jude. I am willing to bet two things. You can set the line today in the chat. I'm going to let you set the line. The total score is the first year I won 6-0, 6-2. The second year I won 6-0, 6-4 in that order in those sets. I'm a worst second set player. I'm in disgusting shape, the worst shape in my literal life. I've had an amazing summer, great social events, and I've ate and drank like an idiot. Now, with that said, I am so disgusted with his game that the bets I am going to allow, I want you to set the line. We'll bet that. That one's easy. I'll obviously beat the line. He stinks at tennis. But I also want to say this. I will bet an Adam-like bet, and I'll actually come through with this bet.
Oh, you just make the bet. Just what's the bet?
No stipulations. That two bets. One, that Adam will not win the match. No spread. Just will not win the match. And two, that Adam will not win a set in this match and will never beat me in a set.
Yeah.
Two things.
I think, you know, what's interesting, Dan, is that at no point, we've played three matches. At no point.
We've played three matches.
We played the practice.
No, we played a practice set. That's not a match.
Okay, we played five sets. At no point have I ever led in games. So that's
right.
I would love to get off to 1-0 start. But the other thing is, I'm not gonna talk that much trash because I've seen you. I've seen the way you, Scott Fish, we go out, we have a cheesesteak, right? And you're the only slob who ate the whole thing.
Jesus.
The rest of us grown men can pace ourselves. You're overweight. We're playing.
Whoa.
We're playing at 4 o'clock p.m. in August in South Florida. I was born in the heat. You merely adopted it. Okay. You're going to be out of shape, not by the third set, not by the third game. You're going to be out of shape by the third point. You're going to be gassed. You might die.
Wow.
So you will not be able to keep up with me. You better win that first set quickly because by the second set, you're not going to be able to run. And that's it. Let's move on to the show. Okay.
All right.
We have some good stuff for you today.
What epic rants.
Shave the three lines. Like this perpetuating this myth, the ridiculous. We got a great show today. We have some
I mean, that's not a myth. You didn't do it when you were supposed to do it.
But right. I did it.
But you didn't do it when you were supposed to,
and
you made up a fake excuse that nobody ever bought at the time.
You asked my wife in her in person; she told you it was actually exactly what happened.
Yeah, because you told her to tell me that. You literally like set her up. I know how you do things.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. All right. Draftathon questions. Thank you for your donations there. Emails at fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. Haven't really gotten a lot of fantasy cop submissions. So if you have any league disputes, please email us fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. That's the letter I. And put fantasy cops in the subject line. Also, one of our listeners made an FFT bingo website. And I want to take a look at that in a minute. But here's some questions.
Oh, do it right now. Stop. Go ahead.
No. Let's get to the Fresh Prince of Bel Air.
Whoever it is gets a spot in the leftover league.
Yeah. He says, call me crazy, but is Malik Willis about to become everything we hoped and dreamed Anthony Richardson would be? He has the same rushing upside as Richardson, but we've actually seen Malik be a competent passer in the league. If so, Malik Willis is being slept on and is a steal in the later rounds, especially in 4 point per passing touchdown leagues.
He's essentially what we did with Justin Fields last preseason, but because the Justin Fields thing blew up in our face as much as it did, the ADP just has not moved on Malik Willis. I think it's probably better to have him somewhere in between, though, where he's at now and where Justin Fields was at, which, by the way, was steamed up to like QB8, QB9, QB10 range before last drafts. And in reality, as I look to it in my head, I'm like, isn't there a much better chance that Willis does end up keeping the starting job? Now, Quinn Ewers did not embarrass himself last year. He actually looked kind of decent, I thought, throwing the football last year. But the Fields thing was a two-year kind of whatever deal with the Jets. The Willis thing, was it a three-year deal, I believe? It looks almost like they kind of believe he could potentially be their guy if they hit on him. So I feel like his ADP is still just not where it should be. I don't know if I'm ready to take the leap. I guess you could make the case like, you know, Fields had Garrett Wilson, maybe a better O-line, though I think that's debatable. I kind of like the Dolphins O-line, to be honest, and they draft another first-round pick out of Bama this year, who's probably a better run blocker than pass blocker, but a good player overall. I think he's probably underrated, and Willis is probably more upside in that QB2 range than anyone but Kyler.
So the last part, I think, is the thing that matters most here. So when you have your quarterback strategy, whatever that is for you. We saw a draft that we just did, right? Somebody ended up with their last two picks or two of the last three picks. They took Jared Goff and Jackson Dart. Dave took Malik Willis late after drafting Jalen Hurts. There's quarterbacks that are going to have a good floor that are number two quarterbacks. Jared Goff, Patrick Mahomes is in that range now. Brock Purdy, I think, has a good floor. Bo Nix has a good floor. Then you have this other group of quarterbacks. Dan mentioned two. Kyler Murray, Malik Willis. Throw Tyler Shuck in there also because his ceiling, I think, is probably a little bit higher if he hits than some of these other guys. If you like your quarterback and you're pretty solid and you're just taking another quarterback because you have empty roster spots or don't love anything else or looking maybe as a trade chip, those are the type of guys that you're taking. If you wait on the position, I would like to take one of each. I would like to take a Goff and a Dart, a Goff and a Kyler, a Goff and a, you know, Malik Willis. I think those are guys that could be league winners, but if they fail, they're going to be awful. So Anthony Richardson, speaking of which, you saw the full Anthony Richardson fantasy experience last night. He looked awful, but he got you 11 and a half points and a half. Like that's just what he does.
Yeah. Dan, we got a comment here. Dan is so intense. Wonder how he orders a complicated sandwich at the deli.
I just did order a complicated one yesterday. I had broccoli rabe, hot fryer peppers, provolone. But you know what? It's different at the deli because I don't have someone like Adam who thinks he can actually beat me, even though everything says in his brain that he can't. But you know what? I respect your confidence level. What I don't respect
about that confidence,
you do a slob
about that
is calling. Yeah, the slob call out, despite it being true. I mean, I'm at 100. It's really disgusting where I'm at right now. I'm at 184. I was at 168 last summer, but I've been eating and drinking. I had a good social summer. It is what it is. I'm gonna roll into this test. Here's the thing: Sabalenka, is she in amazing shape? No, she beats the ball up and she beats her opponents. When you have a weak opponent like Adam, who just puts nothing, the lack of pace that you put on a tennis ball.
Oh, have you mentioned that yet? I haven't heard about the lack of pace on the shots yet.
The thing is, you actually had some pace on your forehand last year, and you've regressed in some way. It's insane.
Okay. Next email is from Big Nasty. He says, I want to know what the biggest difference between 12-team and 14-team leagues is for you guys. I'm in a league with all my good friends from college, and we recently just added two more of our friends to make it a 14-team league. So what's the biggest difference, Jamie, between 12-team and 14-team league?
Two more managers. I think the thing that you got to look at is can you get away with waiting on quarterback? I think you can because it's so deep. I think you want to probably, depending on the scoring system, figure out what your flex is going to be because I think that matters if you're going to lean heavily toward receiver, running back. The decision comes in, I think, where you pick. As well, so we know there's four receivers going in the first round. You're going to still get probably some good value in the second round. I think let the second round dictate your strategy. That probably works for 12-team leagues too. But it shouldn't really change your approach too much, but I think really just quarterback, tight end, that's really the two positions that you should focus on.
I say it a lot, but in a 14-team league, I really hate coming out of a draft with bad running back depth. You can't have everything you want. But, you can plug in a wide receiver from the waiver wire that could get you, 8 to 12 PPR points and be your representative. Sometimes you look at the waiver wire in a 14-team league at running back and it's just absolute garbage. So I'd like to have at least three guys that I can trust on a weekly basis if possible. It's not that hard to do. I mean, it just means...
It is in 14, but...
So if you're saying you want three guys you could trust, and let's... How do we do the podcast league? Two receivers and a flex?
Yeah, I'd say like three top 30 guys.
So you probably need to take three running backs of your first four picks.
No, I don't think so. Because like Jalen Warren could be my third guy. I'd be fine with that. Or someone in that range. It doesn't have to be three top 20 guys. Just, I don't want to look at we had a team that drafted today that started Chase Brown, Saquon Barkley, and their third running back was Tyrone Tracy Jr. That's not going to be me in a 14-team league.
So I guess let's look at it differently. So you have pick... Five.
Yeah.
You're starting receiver, right?
Yeah.
Or taking McCaffrey there?
No, receiver.
Okay, so you're starting receiver. So now you get to round two, and you're probably looking at Jeremiah Love as your best running back.
Yeah, I'll probably take a receiver there. I don't have to be elite at running back. I'm just saying I want at least three running backs.
Oh, you don't? Yeah, I got you.
Yeah. At least three running backs.
You'd be fine with a Scadaboo, Pollard, Jalen Warren trio?
I think I'd prefer it to be something like Scadaboo, Irving, Jalen Warren, but yeah. Yeah, something like
okay.
that.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
See, I would rather take the best player then as opposed to just pigeonholing myself to taking those running backs. Like,
always. I guess my point was like running back dries up pretty quickly. 14 team league, waiver wire really sucks at running back, whereas you're going to have these guys that are going to get maybe five targets or something like that, could get four catches and, you know, at wide receiver. All right, we got to take a break. When we come back, let's take a look at FFT Bingo and read your emails at fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. We'll be right back. Okay. JD, one of our listeners, made FFT Bingo. I think it's got the potential to be pretty funny. Let's take a look. Share my screen here. So you can select
the this hosts. Is good.
I got Adam, Jamie, and Dave here. Let's generate the grid. All right. Adam gets Raz for Azer statting. Eddie mentioned that tight end is deep this year. A poll is consulted. Jamie starts the statement with again. A combine stat is mentioned. Jamie curses. Let's hope we're not checking that one off.
You already did check that one off yourself.
I said the A word.
Yeah, is that not considered a curse in your book?
Adam, any mention of the green zone? Dan says unbelievable. And Adam drops a trailing preposition despite his war against washed. What the hell is a trailing preposition?
Three guys supposed to be journalists. None of us know the answer.
Holy shit, that was good.
Oh, you son of a...
Sorry, I cursed again.
All right, let's see. We got to cross that up. All right, Jamie curses. All right, we'll check. We'll consult back with the bingo card. You have to start the statement with again, not just say again.
Again, that was great.
Yeah, but let's see if it comes up naturally. I'll zoom in on it. You know, I'll zoom in on it right now. So when we go back to it, we can, where's the damn zoom? Once I figure out how to zoom, there we go. We zoomed. All right, let's get to the questions here. Thank you, JD.
Mel's comment in the chat.
What is it? Who's?
Mel Bailey.
Can I read it or no?
I like it, but the only thing he missed was to say Dave interrupting Adam every 48 seconds. Well, I didn't put Dave under the bingo card. Like, and I'm sure if I had added,
well, let's see what another combination is.
All right.
Click mailbag. Click mailbag for miscellaneous. That's important. They said.
All right. Now I have to unzoom.
This is awesome.
This is so good.
FFT.
We have the best listeners in the freaking world. Literally the best listeners. I can't believe it. I feel like the Big Blue Banter crew listeners is amazing. This
FFT
is
open so, plug. We're good.
Amazing.
Adam tries to wriggle out of the beard bet.
Yep.
Well said. He knew it right away.
Dan FFT talks about,
open plug. Yep.
Dan talks about golf. That's going to happen.
Adam, yep. Did. Oh, no, I was off here.
Adam and Dan's tennis rivalry is mentioned.
Oh, it was more than mentioned.
FFT open
never
plug.
Thought I'd be fat shamed on today's show.
All right, let's get to the questions here from
Never
Noah.
Thought I'd be fat shamed on a show, but ordered broccoli Rob with provolone at a sub shop.
Oh, there was more on that. Chicken cutlet, prosciutto, fried prosciutto, bread. Yeah. It was
Did
great.
You eat the whole thing?
I ate the whole thing. I didn't know it was faux pas to eat a whole sandwich. According to Adam, the mature men eat a half a sandwich.
It was me, Scott Fish, and Joe Bryant. We're grown-ups. We look at the food and we say, we don't have to eat the entire thing here. It's a very heavy sandwich.
Very mature.
Oh, by the way, Scott wanted me to make mention that you are unaware that you can request a refrigerator for your room.
Wait, what?
You can request a refrigerator for your room if it's not there.
Oh, we had a refrigerator. Yeah, that's the other thing. Could have just brought the sub home and put it in the damn refrigerator.
I'm sorry, a microwave.
Oh, a microwave. Oh, okay.
Yes.
All right, this is from Noah. Dear Tony, Steve, Peter, and Bruce. Game of Thrones, Dan?
What was it? Tony what?
Tony, Steve, Peter, and Bruce.
Don't have it. Don't have
Adam
it.
Adam knows this. I'm impressed.
Yeah, it's all the Avengers, right?
Yeah, but you got to look it up.
No, I didn't. That's easy. Hey,
he does a lot of that look it up cheating that people don't know about. He's one of the biggest offenders, I would say, in that regard.
You know, this drives me crazy. You make up so many things about me. What are you talking about? I don't do that. When I look it up, I tell you.
What are your thoughts on that?
With wide receiver coming off a down year, so many receivers falling in the blob of boomer bust wide receiver threes, I'm curious how predictive weekly matchups are to when the wide receiver booms. In other words, are wide receiver threes more likely to boom when facing a bottom 10 pass defense? I'm leaning towards a heavy running back build this year, so I'm wondering how close to wide receiver two production I can get out of playing matchups with three or four boom bust wide receivers in the mid to late rounds. Good question.
Obviously
it matters. Yeah. It comes down to, you know, I think the pass offenses that you're talking about. So like a guy like Jameson Williams, for example, we expect the Lions to be pass heavy and that should benefit him. I think Christian Watson's not going to be in a pass heavy offense, but his role is solidified, you know, so he's going to get those chances. You know, so it's probably 50-50 on what you're talking about here, matchups versus player versus offense. You know, that's not two categories, but you get the point. Like, we're looking at, you know, who the player is and I think what the opportunities are for them. So, you know, comparing those type of guys to, let's say, a Josh Downs or, you know, Wandale Robinson, where they're going to get guaranteed targets. They may not be great week to week, but you know that they're going to get opportunities.
I have a different take on this. I think it's harder to do than ever. Last year, we saw the fall off. Only eight teams averaged 250 yards passing or more. It was down from 9 the year before. It was 17 just 5 years ago. And as teams are moving more towards these heavier personnel groups to try to combat the too high looks with split safety looks, I think the ones you're going to see this being possible for are the ones that are running a lot of 12 personnel, two tight ends on the field, two receivers with defined number two that isn't high on ADP based on bad quarterback situation, whatever it may be. Someone maybe like a Jalen Coker is someone that interests me as far as floor goes. Players like who just got extended, by the way, on a contract. The players like in the Packers situation, a little less interested in, because any of these teams with like Golden, Watson, and Reed expected to be on the field for a lot of snaps. That's where I'm not so sure where the target distribution is going to, and I'm not so sure where the overall total passing production is going to, given how run heavy they've been. I think they were the number one rush over expectation team in the entire NFL last year by far, the Packers, and it's kind of been the case for LaFleur, just to use them as an example. So it's very interesting as teams are going away from the pass. We have these first round one, round two, round three, where it's like all the values are running back. I kind of want to start running back. But it's also like, if you don't get one of these few receivers who are actually getting the volume week to week, you're kind of stuck at receiver, or you're just taking gambles. Like, I like Jameson Williams. I'm with you on that, Jamie, and their schedule is easy and they're in the domes. They're going to be a good passing team. But I think we both would agree that Jameson Williams, his total production will probably be like wide receiver 12, whatever. But he's going to have like a week to week inconsistency, as he's kind of always had.
Oh, right? Well, that's the so build that this manager's going for.
Yeah. It's,
you know, the volatility. So you'll have blow up weeks. And obviously, if he's going running back heavy or she's going running back heavy, then your running backs will have to carry you. Tight end may have to carry you, quarterback, et cetera. And then the weeks where your wide receivers go off, or one or two of them go off, you're going to probably obliterate the field. The other part of it is going to have some of those weeks where you're inconsistent. And just real quick on the topic, Dan, you're going to love this. Pete Prisco told me yesterday it's either a 5-part series or he has 5 reasons why passing games have just gone in the toilet. And so he has gone on part of his training camp tour. He talked to LaFleur about this, Matt LaFleur about this, Joe Brady about this, Todd Monken about this, Liam Cohen about this. He said he spent an hour with Liam Cohen in his offense just going over stuff. And for Pete, who's covered the NFL over 30 plus years, he said Cohen was showing him stuff that defenses are doing right now that, you know, offenses aren't adjusting to. He said that Cohen and Sean McVay had a conversation like, are we just doing too much at times, like to try and throw things off? It was fascinating to hear Pete's story about this. I can't wait to read what Pete's going to write about it. But just, you know, how passing games have sucked. And, you know, knowing Pete, I don't know, you know, you guys do a little bit. He said, I've told all these coaches, you guys got to stop being afraid. And, you know, like they get defensive about it. I'm not the one that's afraid. And he said, yes, you are. You know, you think running the ball is going to be successful. He told me, I told Joe Brady, when James Cook runs the ball, the defense wins, because you're taking the ball out of Josh Allen's hands. You know, so like, that's how aggressive he's being with his take on this. Passing game has just been absolutely abysmal.
So it's interesting. Wait, question. How long do you think this kind of downward trend? This is a more than one season issue with passing games, right? You're saying
The last two seasons have been 8 and then 9 the year before in 2024, as far as 250 plus passing average per game, which is not even a lot.
But I'll just bring up that 2024 included in this, right, as like a down passing season. It was a perfectly fine year for wide receivers. We had 29 wide receivers that year average 14 or more points. It's not like
in
last
full PPR.
Year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Last year we had 16. So last year was really bad. The year before that was not. The year before that was a normal wide receiver year. I'm not sure.
Well, that is also just because we have the change. Like, it's like the passing comes down because of the scheme, right? Because it's like teams are obviously like evolving to what they see on defense. Too high cover, two cover, three cover, six. But then it's like last year was more of the 12 personnel. So it's actually the personnel is changing, right? Because there was still a lot of 11 personnel in 2024. And now we're moving toward teams drafting. What do we have? More tight ends drafted in this draft class than any class since like 2002 or something like that. So now teams are going to be using fewer receivers in general on the field.
Yeah, maybe. All right. It's interesting. And I had that thought, like if you want an elite wide receiver, you better get one early. But also the historic trends are that wide receivers, including last year, easier to find like must start guys later in drafts than at running back, at least over a full season. A guy like Chris Olave, a guy like Zay Flowers last year. Whereas you look at the top six running backs each of the last two seasons. So that's 12 running backs that have finished top six, 11 of them over the last two seasons have been drafted in the first two rounds compared to seven of the top six wide receivers over the last two seasons.
I do think that's a great stat, Adam. We have also run really lucky with injuries at running back over the last 2 years.
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe last year.
And I also make this point, just a counterpoint, with wide receivers, I don't really think running backs are that much more injury prone than wide receivers, but with wide receivers, you also have to worry about quarterback injuries because they will affect a starting running back. Right. But I think they will affect starting wide receivers more. Let's go to our
next question. Done a great job convincing me on that, by the way, with your data and just like everything you've talked about the running back receiver.
Thank you for the olive branch. One's from Jaron. If Daniel Jones plays 17 games, he ends as quarterback what, Jamie?
17.
Really?
So this is a big debate I've had with Jacob all offseason because we initially compared our rankings a couple weeks ago and beyond the box score. He decimated my rankings live on air, and Daniel Jones was one of the ones that I was much higher on than him, which is weird because I don't believe in him. But I think everybody just assumes he's not going to run this year. Why, though? Like, he's completely healthy, has no limitations in camp, and he's never been a quarterback that, in my mind at least, that doesn't run. Like, scrambling's part of his game when you're not a great solution finder. And last year, he more than doubled the next quarterback in first read target percentage. He threw 8.8% to his first read. The next was like 4.9 or something like that. When he doesn't see it there and Steichen doesn't design that first read, which he did a great job of last year, Steichen, kudos to him. It's going to be a little harder this year when teams have tape on what Steichen and Jones are all about. He's going to scramble, and that's just going to bring up both his floor and his ceiling as a quarterback. If he plays all 17 games, I think he's going to shock people, and he's going to be just outside or inside that QB1 range. I kind of really like him for Superflex.
So just a couple things. I think he could do that, but again, as we see quarterbacks mature and get older and come off significant injuries – did I say again?
You did, yep. it's not either. But this says FFT Dynasty podcast plug. I guarantee that was supposed to be a Beyond the Box Score podcast plug because this is an Adam, Dan, Jamie bingo board.
Yeah.
And we just got that. So yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
This is awesome.
I think what we're going to end up seeing is just the design runs are not there and the scrambling gets cut in half.
Well, here's the, no, I got to bring
design
this
runs I'm with you on.
He ran less than ever last year.
Yeah.
He was really good last year, you know, ended up as QB 14 per game.
Again, the first read was open. That's why, literally.
Yeah.
We also have a pretty significant downgrade in the receiving corps across the board.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm not
really. I mean, Alec Pierce literally looks like he's walking with a limp in the video I saw. I don't know what we're doing with Pierce, but I don't know. I'm ranking him so low right now.
Yeah, same.
All right, here's the one from Aaron. He says, hey, Chase, Joe, and T. Dan?
Browns.
Chase, Joe, and T. Yeah, I mean, he gave it away. These are the Browns players. I would have got there if Jamie hadn't done it first.
Which Browns?
Oh, which Browns? T. Higgins, Chase Brown, and Joe Burrow, those Browns?
Dan doesn't realize I'm joking.
Oh, no, I mean Bengals.
Oh, man.
You got me. The fat shaming has really put me off on this show. What did he call me, Jamie? A slob, or what was the word he used?
I said you were overweight.
No, you did not.
You call him a slob.
I said you were overweight, and Jamie went, whoa. If I called you,
I'm sorry.
A slob. No, his reaction was to the visceral slob word that you used.
You did use the word slob.
Me. I don't slob, remember. Among other things, might have been even worse. The chat, remind us what he said about me. Right. This is a guy who met a FFT listener. I shouldn't even say this. he might get mad at this.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know what you're going to say. I don't know what you're going to say, but I think I will get mad. You guys, this is the question from Aaron. I've heard contradictory statements on the podcast about the Bengals. Things like Burrow could throw 5,000 yards, but and their improved defense will help Chase Brown. And you seem super high on T. Higgins. Other than touchdowns, what does T. Higgins do well? If the Bengals' D is better, is Ja'Marr Chase really worth the third overall pick? I guess he's kind of saying we've been contradictory. Jamie, the Bengals, I guess give me a season outlook here for them.
5,000 yards is a big ask in today's offensive environment, but if there is a team that can get close to it, I think the Bengals will be on the top of the list. Clearly, we need to have a healthy Joe Burrow for the majority of the season. I think all four players, quarterback, two receivers, running back, can all be in the upper echelon of their respective positions. What does T. Higgins do well? Well, Dan likes to say this a lot. Touchdowns are hard to predict, but when there is a guy that can score touchdowns and has done it consistently, you kind of gravitate toward that. Well, he has 21 touchdowns in his last 27 games, back-to-back seasons with 10-plus touchdowns, not playing full seasons in one of those. So he's one of those guys, I think, that you could say 8-plus touchdowns is realistic, 10-plus touchdowns is on the table, and then you give him probably 1,000 yards to maybe 1,200 if he plays a full season and somewhere in the neighborhood of 75 catches. So for me, that's a high-end number two receiver. You bake in the injury risk that probably puts him back end of round three, beginning of round four. Ja'Marr Chase says he wants 23 touchdowns. I'm not going to bet against him. I'm not going to bet on that. But I think we're looking at a guy that can be close to the touchdown leader. He already did that 2 years ago when he was a Triple Crown winner. So, yes, the Bengals defense will be better. Does not mean the Bengals defense is great. So we can have, you know, this is such a myth. You can still have a great offense with a great defense. Yeah, you don't have to have a great offense with a bad defense. It doesn't mean, okay, yeah, your defense is good. Well, your offense sucks. Like, the Rams are going to score a lot of points. The Bengals should still score plenty of points with an improved defense. Dallas should still score plenty of points with an improved defense. So I don't think you look at it and say defense is better. That means the offense sucks. So I'm drafting Joe Burrow as a top five quarterback. I'm drafting Chase Brown as a top five running back. And Ja'Marr Chase, number one receiver, T. Higgins, top 15.
It is now time for Adam to share a Word document. Okay. This is Joe Burrow's pass attempts per game in his healthy games, matched up with Cincinnati's defensive rank. You see, in year two, they were 17th in defense, and he only threw 32.5 pass attempts per game. I don't know what that was all about. But in year three, I believe this was their Super Bowl year, the Bengals were fifth in defense, and he threw 37.9 pass attempts per game in his healthy games. And he's been 38.7, 38.4, 35.1 last year, which I expect to be even higher than that. They will throw plenty, and they don't really have, they're not a physical ground and pound run team.
They're right. Trying to become one somehow.
They don't have the personnel for that. So
they're going away from that so fast. Looking at the first play where Burrow went play under center play action and took a sack, I was just looking at that, and I know he threw a dig route to Chase later last night, but it was just like, I was looking at them like, they're so going away from this whole thing so fast this season. I think they'll be the first team to go away from everyone. The Giants, the Bengals, the Ravens, all these teams trying to get their quarterbacks under center. To me, the Bengals are the first team to go away from it. What are you laughing at?
I'm laughing at a an email that we just got, like a draftathon email.
I'm laughing at the chat. So we have two things we're laughing at. What, MB spam, what is this broke Word doc? Is this how the Azer stats are calculated? Is this how you calculate your stats?
Hey, listen, man, this is part of my Joe Burrow research. Because You might go, not you, but someone out there might go, well, they're going to have a better defense. They're not going to throw as much. We've got to do the research and say, hey, they went to the Super Bowl 1 year. They had the fifth best defense and he threw 38 times per game. So
bigger concern is it's 2026 and you're using Word.
What should I be using?
Google Sheets, Google Docs, Excel.
This is on my laptop. I can upload it to Google Docs after. This is my stuff. I just
copy. Excel Sheets seems like a better use of like Excel. A numbers-based. A numbers-based sheets, a number-based thing.
Part
you don't
of the
need
the full Joe Burrow analysis. There's a lot of words in there. Excel wouldn't work for that.
Seemed like a lot of numbers, not words.
Well, that because I just took the numbers part out.
Okay.
All right. This is from Michael, and he says, "Dear Jeremy, Mark, Evan, and Isaiah."
Jeremy, Mark, Evan, and Isaiah. Isaiah likely Mark Andrews.
Nope. Shockey. Close.
Evan Ingram.
No, Bavaro, Shockey.
Dan, the fact that Jamie
Giants
got
tight
that,
ends.
Come
Giants
on,
tight
man.
Ends. I mean, I would have got there eventually. Jamie's just good at this game. I'm not. We've established that long time ago.
I have the fourth pick in a 12-team PPR league. I was planning to take Puka Nacua, but with the groin and the suspension potentially looming, should I pivot to Amon-Ra St. Brown or Christian McCaffrey or JSN. What are you guys doing at four right now? We did a draft this morning and Nacua went eighth, I think.
The way I see it is JSN almost wildly unlikely to repeat in last season. He's probably the biggest regression candidate in fantasy football. I still think he'll be very good, but not at that level where I would pass on a Puka. McCaffrey's the only one I would consider because McCaffrey can outscore Puka. The rest of them can't outscore Puka. I don't think he's getting suspended either.
If he gets suspended, we're probably looking at two games max just because he hasn't been convicted of anything.
Right.
I would think the groin injury is a little bit more concerning. Didn't he have a hamstring injury last year at the start of camp, or was that just a Stafford's back injury that dropped?
I think it was just the Stafford back that was getting us last year.
Yeah, I thought there might have been something for him too. So he was a great value pick last year. This may scare some people off. He's still working, you know, off on the side, so it's not like he's just sitting out completely. I think if we get to the end of August and he's still out and we're doing drafts then he, you know, should fall. For me, he's still the fourth overall pick.
Yeah.
If you want to go to a different receiver, you can go to the other two guys.
All right. Next up, we have Matt in Canada. Oh, actually, next up, we have a commercial break. Matt in Canada says, if all 32 starting running backs decide to take a spaceship to Mars for the next 6 months, how would you rank the top five of those left here on Earth? Great question. We'll come back after this.
That's a good question.
Yeah. On Fantasy Football Today. All right. Again, if all 32 starting running backs take a spaceship to Mars for the next 6 months, how would you rank the top five running backs of those left here on Earth?
And I'm going to answer this question under the assumption that I'm just ranking them based on their talent, not based on their fantasy situation, or am I ranking it based on fantasy?
I think it's got to be fantasy.
Okay.
And who are the 32 starters? Because we have some questions in certain backfields.
I
don't know if that'll be your answer, though. Like, we'll see. Like, to me, like, the first two that came to mind are Corum and Manungai, right? Those are one and two.
I don't know about Manungai two.
Maybe not Manungai.
They're in the top five. Yeah, yeah.
Corum and Manungai for sure. I wish he was healthy. I could say Jordan James, but I can't because he's not healthy, so I can't say him, but that would be a good one. Let's see. Corum and Manungai, not Ray Davis, because I think that
PPR?
Ty would play.
Yeah, we'll do PPR. Why not?
Gainwell's in my top five.
Ooh, interesting.
Gainwell was awesome last year when he got the chance to start for the Steelers.
That is true.
So different.
Wouldn't they use Tucker more?
Yeah, they do have Sean Tucker.
That one scares me. Tank Bigsby's a really good one, right?
I don't know if he's going to catch the ball.
I don't know if it matters. Barkley didn't catch the ball in 2024.
You know, Chris Rodriguez is a good player, but yeah
anyone with Liam Cohen, but
he doesn't catch the ball.
I would say my top ones are Corum, Bigsby for fantasy.
Trevion's
one. Trevion's one.
I don't know. I think they find other dudes to put in there. No. Knowing McDaniel.
Well, I mean, getting so nitpicky on this. Yeah, it's just who's the backup and how good are they?
No, it's based on their fantasy situation and how the teams use them.
My
who's
top five
actually
would
be a workhorse.
I'll go Henderson one, Corum two, Manungai three. You want to put Gainwell four?
Pacheco?
No.
I mean, to go walk into the Lions situation, not bad.
Already hurt.
Mike
may
Washington.
Lose his job to Vaki.
I think
but
Mike
if
Washington.
You draft him before Gibbs.
I'm going to go Henderson 1,
Gibbs in an
Corum 2, Manungai 3, Vidal 4, Gainwell 5.
Vidal, I completely disagree on Vidal. I think Keaton Mitchell better than Vidal.
Yeah, that's a problem for Vidal. I wouldn't
be in
on Vidal.
Yeah, but Keaton Mitchell's not being an every down back.
Neither is Vidal. I think they eat into each other too much.
Oh, I'm sorry. Take out Vidal. Ray Davis, 4. Cannon Gainwell, 5.
Okay. Tajay Spears would be in my top 5.
No. No way.
100%.
No way. That Titans offense looks like it could be trash.
You're nitpicking too much. This guy
I'm not nitpicking.
It's
fantasy is about situations.
Dominate touches. Dominate.
Please.
All right. Thanks, Matt, for making us hate each other even more. This one's from Ryan. Dear Adam, the greatest fantasy football host in the world. Wow.
Such a shocker you read this one.
Well, yeah. I knew Dan was on the show. I had to put something on here to boost my confidence.
Oh, you manipulated it again? Okay, go ahead.
No. When you guys say great or late for tight end, how late is too late? Is late considered Kincaid in the 9th round? Don't take him in the 9th round. He should be going later than that. Or more like likely in the 12th round. He's not going to make it to the 12th round.
He's not making it as well. Yeah.
Switch those rounds.
That's a good question. I'm not a grader. I don't say greater late. Is this something you say, Jamie? So I'll let you answer
what?
This.
No, this is something that Adam came up with like 4 years ago. And Heath jokingly gives Jamie credit for it.
No, because I would say it on other shows, giving you credit, and then people would give me credit, and then come on, and be like, "Oh, you guys have that great or late theory. It's so awesome."
Dude, you guys are Jamie. Is this another thing you claim, Adam, that's not true?
Let me tell you something. I called Dan a few days ago about something work-related, and Dan goes, "Hey, Dan." And by the way, when we played our practice match, I knew Dan was playing with his dad the next day. Dad, his parents, lovely people, by the way. Very nice people. I don't know.
Broad-chested?
No. I don't know where Dan came from, but Dan says to me, I just let you know I haven't picked up a racket since we played. And then a couple minutes later, I go, well, did you play with your dad? The next day, he goes, yeah, we played.
It was doubles with me and my dad. Me and my seven-year-old dad versus my friend Gary and his seven-year-old dad.
But you didn't use a racket for that. You just used your hands.
That was unfortunately, and then luckily for me, I got in a set with my brother last weekend. Thank God. I need to try to find a way to play before
you,
our set.
You played him last week before the phone call with me where you said you hadn't picked
up a racket? No. Was the phone call this week?
Yes, it was like 3 days ago.
And I did lie to you about
such
that.
Such a liar.
Wow.
He's such a liar, this guy. Unbelievable.
I did get one set with him in Brooklyn.
All right, great or late is, I would say it's like basically the top 12 tight ends. It's like that, where you're going like likely Goddard, Kelsey, late, or Kittle if he falls there, as opposed to great. But it would be avoiding, I don't really know if I subscribe to it this year because we like the tight end position better. It would be avoiding guys like Fannin and Pitts and Laporta in the mid rounds. That's usually actually what I do.
Well, I think it's also like if you like the position, you don't have to spend the premium price tag on Bowers and McBride.
Yeah. But it is avoiding the mid-round guys. That's what it is.
That's what it is. And I had that conversation with Jacob on yesterday's show or the one before for Beyond the Box Score. And I was just like, he loves Fannin and he thinks that's a great value. I don't want to take anyone there. And he's like, I guess the debate is this year, do those guys have enough upside? Because I do like to avoid them usually. And I'm curious what you think on this, Jamie. Do those guys have enough upside? The Fannin craft, I'll just put it at. Maybe likely you want to throw that in there. To outweigh what you're giving up at receiver and running back from a depth standpoint at that point, because you're taking at that point most likely a backup or flex, depending on how big your league is. And I never feel like those tight ends are worth it, but they might be this year.
I think they will be this year if they hit, but that's the problem that we run into with the tight ends in this spot is, you know, we're asking a lot of Sam Laporta because of a coordinator change in a very crowded offense. We're asking a lot of Harold Fannin to do what he did last year in now a crowded offense. We're asking Kyle Pitts, who's never been consistent, to be consistent. Like, there's a lot of, you know, questions.
I wish I could share what we're laughing about, but it's not appropriate.
Not appropriate at all.
We've got 10 minutes left. We need 8 of them for Dan to tell a story. So let's
it's a doozy.
Let's fly through the rest of these emails. From Ace, do you think Travion Henderson is a bigger, faster version of James White in the Josh McDaniels offense, a PPR Pac-Man?
No.
I mean, James White could block and run routes the right way.
Yeah, I don't think
so. I mean, did you know that Ramondre Stevenson had a better yards per out run last year than Travion Henderson?
Yeah, he had his best receiving season ever, though, so I'm not really buying that from Travion.
And he's looked in camp so far. He's been doing work in the passing game from what I've seen.
Yeah,
he's been
good. That's why Travion's not James White. This is from Gunner. I wish I had a chance to look into this, Gunner. I'm sorry. I just saw this email this morning. Do you have any data on how it has worked out in the fantasy world for guys drafted in the first half of the first round alongside a teammate? Gibbs and Amon-Ra St. Brown are the only ones I can think of, and I'm curious if this should be a red flag.
So what is it? The first half, say it again.
Like two top six, or you can extend it, top eight, whatever, on the same team.
What do we have this year? What do we even have with that? Cowboy? No,
we have the Lions.
Oh, the Lions. Yeah. Gibbs and Amara. Did we have this last year? I'm trying to remember.
Gibbs and Amara were both top 9 picks last year, so it's not that far off.
Yeah, right.
I think really we just say first round picks. And they both paid off. Same team.
They both paid off beautifully.
Yeah.
I'm looking.
I mean, you could have Bijan in London this year.
We've had mistakes like Breece Hall and Garrett Wilson on a bad
offense. That was round three.
No, 3 years ago.
That was round one.
That was round one, 2024. Not 2 years ago.
Wilson was more like the turn.
Garrett Wilson.
I'm looking at Fantasy Pros ADP right now. Breece Hall, pick 4 or 5. Garrett Wilson, 12th.
Hmm.
Yeah, it was a mistake. But that's why you don't take bad offenses.
That was the Rodgers first year, Rodgers, when people
Kelsey and Hill go in round one?
That's a good question.
They must have. No, Kelce took him a while to go to round one, even when he was dominating.
If two players on the same team are going to be worth round one picks, they're going to have to be on really good offense. And the Lions are fit that mold.
Right. So the Falcons is the tough one to buy, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I've seen good people point. Like be like, I took Bijan Robinson in round one. Drake London fell to me in round two, but I didn't want to do it because it almost happened with you, Jamie. Like, oh, no, it didn't. You took Jefferson. You took, I'm sorry. You took Chase. Let's say you had started with Bijan at pick four and London had been there today in the half PPR draft. Would you have done it?
No.
Okay.
I think the stat that Jamie referenced a bunch is a great stat. I've heard you say it on a bunch of FTs. The only reason I feel comfortable taking Bijan that high, which is to his percentage targeting running backs. I'm very nervous about London and Bijan this year, both of them. That Falcons offense could be much worse than people think, potentially.
All right, we've got, let's see, Bob. This will be our last one here. Bob thinks we're sleeping on Jadarian Price.
Mm.
What am I missing, he asks.
Well, you're missing the fact that Charbonnet is ahead of schedule on his ACL recovery. And from what I've heard, it's like the good ACL. I don't even know what that means anymore. The good ACL tear. Whenever I hear that, I think of the Curb Your Enthusiasm skit with the Hodgkins disease, the good and the bad Hodgkins. But apparently he's got the good ACL. He's coming back faster than expected. And if you draft Price and then Charbonnet's back, what's the upside there? We know Charbonnet's handling all the red zone work. So now you've kind of got a dead zone back at that point, unless you think he's that good that he can, I guess, score from distance, because he's not going to get a lot of receptions, or at least wasn't on his college profile, Jadarian Price. And if he loses red zone work, it doesn't feel like a good bet to me.
And it sounds like they're going to use, even when Charbonnet's not there, Helani.
Yeah, they are going to use Helani.
Yeah, they'll use him. I'm not convinced that Charbonnet is just going to get basically all of the goal line work like he did last year, because 2 years ago, same coach, same head coach, different coordinator, but again, they've recorded this year. Ken Walker actually had more of the goal line work when he was healthy. I think he played 11 games that year. He had more of the goal line work than Charbonnet that season. I would expect Charbonnet would have more goal line carries, but I don't know that he'll have the, like, basically he was that guy last year with few exceptions when he was on the field. So it might be a little bit more even there than it was last season. But Ken Walker was, I think he was RB28 last year. And he had he played well last year. He wasn't RB28 because he stunk. He was RB28 because they didn't throw to him and he didn't score touchdowns. So that's the issue there. But I am not worried at all about George Helani like really hurting Jadarian Price. Yeah, it's one thing if we
but
were
you
taking,
should be.
No, because if I were taking him in the first round or the second or the third, if I'm taking him at the fifth or the sixth round.
Oh, no. Where you're taking Price is perfect. You know, right. Round five, round six range is absolutely perfect. But you still, when you look at the evaluation is, it could be George Helani, it could be Emmanuel Wilson, it could be Dan Schneier. They're going to use somebody else there.
Yeah.
Oh, it can't be me. I would not be able to play football.
Yeah, I'm
well, I mean, according to Adam, I'd be beefed up enough to.
I would be.
Play guard.
Out of commission in the first play guard. Yeah. Last year, Zach Charbonnet had the fifth highest percentage of team touches inside the 10-yard line when healthy. I don't see that going down by too much for Jerry.
It just makes sense that if his knee is right, but not full, you know, full go Zach Charbonnet, like use him in a short yardage role and keep him fresh.
Yeah, I agree. So I've mentioned this before. I don't know that we know how good Jadarian Price is. There have been plenty of guys drafted in that range in the NFL draft, like Rashad Penny and Sony Michel and Clyde Edwards-Helaire, just because they were in the first round doesn't mean they're that good. He didn't really have a lot of work in college, so he's still a bit of an unknown. All right, Dan, we got 4 minutes left. Let's get the bingo card out. Let's check off the golf story. Half the bingo card filled out. Very good. Take us home.
This is the most Dan Schneier story of all Dan Schneier stories. Two Saturdays ago, good friend of mine invited me to his country club to play Watchung Valley. Beautiful course. Love it. Play golf. So we play around. It's match play. It was a hot day. I was planning to walk.
What's match play?
What did you say?
What's match play?
Match play is essentially works like this. There's 18 holes. If you win a hole versus your opponent, you get one basically point for that. So it's not like total strokes. Like you don't win by scoring an 88 versus a 92. It makes it a little bit more fair. Plus, like with the handicap, I had to give him like six strokes or whatever it was. So you give him a chance, whatever. So anyway, I'm planning to walk and carry that day, but it's like 95 degrees. So I get convinced by my friend to ride in the cart. My friend Kevin driving our golf cart. He has the scorecard because he's the driver. The way he does his scorecard, he needs the whole scorecard because he keeps stats on like fairways hit and chips, all sorts of stuff. So it's taking up the whole thing. So he can't keep my score because he needs the whole scorecard. So I'm like, whatever. Like Scott, my other friend who invited me, is keeping score of our match. So he's writing down every score every time. So just keep that in mind. Scott's keeping score the entire day. This is the only time I've ever golfed in my life. Literally the only time where I haven't kept score as I golfed.
Okay.
So I'm having the round of my life out here. At one point, I go 7 pars in a row.
Ooh.
And so when you start to do that in your head, the thing with golf is you never want to jinx yourself. Like I don't think I would have played this well and scored this well if I had kept the score of my card, because I would have seen how well I was doing. Because I wasn't, I think it helped me. But I didn't want to ask anything about what my score was or anything like that. But I knew with 7 pars in a row and a birdie on the front, I had a shot at something real. Like previously, my best score was an 83 at the Knoll. And this is a harder course, 137 slope. We played from the green, 6299 yards. Just want to get that all out there before I get to the final of the story. So I go 7 pars in a row. We get to 18. And finally, my friend Scott, who's keeping score the whole time, says, do you want to know where you're at? Do you want to know what you need? And when he said, do you want to know what you need? I knew what that meant. It meant you have a real shot to break 80, which is insane. So he goes, he's keeping score the whole round. And he goes, you need a birdie. It was a par 5. You need a birdie to break 80. So we hit it. I hit a good drive. Second shot's good. I have 120 left. I go onto the green with a pitching wedge from 120 out. And I have a birdie putt of like 12 feet to break 90 in my head. What I 80. Thought was to break, or no, 80, sorry, to yeah. break 80 in my head. I hit the putt. It's a solid putt, honestly, for a break 80 putt. But I didn't play the break perfectly and it rolls to like, less than a foot, and I tap it in for par. Anyway, the round's over, and I'm so excited. I shot 80. It's my best score ever. I text, this is what you do. I mean, maybe it's just me because I'm an idiot, but this is what, and I'm sure other people do this. I text all these group chats. My brother, look what I just broke 80. Whatever. The next day, on Sunday, I post my scorecard, or maybe it was later that day, on Twitter. I post my scorecard, like, you know, like PR, best round ever. I shot 80. And I post the scorecard Scott gave me. And on the scorecard, he writes down a score for the front and the back, and then he writes down the total score, 80, and then all our other scores, like his score, his dad's, and my friend Kevin.
Please tell me you got it wrong.
I post it wrong. 2 days later, about 72 hours later, I post the scorecard. A listener of the podcast DMs me. He's like, hey, Dan, I don't know what happened here, but your score adds up to 79.
Whoa.
It's like, and you got a 41 on the front and a 38 on the back. And I went back and I looked at it and I'm like, oh my God, I'm in a pure panic mode because I'm celebrating. And so I texted Scott and Kevin, who I was there and played the round with. And I was like, guys, a listener said I shot 79. We said we shot 80. Like, what happened here? And we went over every hole from literally all 18. We're like, nope, that was scored right. And every single hole was scored correctly and written correctly. He just totaled it wrong and added it wrong. So I'm the only guy ever to break 80 and not get the moment of celebration. The moment he broke 80, like I was there and thought I shot an 80, which I was happy about, but there's a difference. And so I went 72 hours without knowing it. And now some of these groups that I sent this message to about shooting an 80 that day, I feel some kind of awkwardness to going back and being like, hey, guys, actually, that 80 I told you I shot? Well, actually, it was a 79. So technically, like, he wrote it wrong. And like, now I'm like, I can't do it.
No, you can't.
But then at the same time, they think I never broke an 80 before. And so, man, it's.
If you're the type of guy to go bragging right after the round, go back and send the same stupid text messages.
Probably right. Probably no one cares in general.
You should bring up something else. And then, like, hey, did you watch the House of the Dragon? Whatever. Oh, by the way, FYI. Yeah. Anyway, is breaking 80 like a huge deal?
It's an insane deal. I've taken a huge jump this year, but to the point where, like, if I do play Thomas, producer Thomas, the last time we played was 2 years ago. He probably just destroyed me by like 12 or 13 strokes. I wasn't even anywhere near his level. Now I feel like I actually have a legitimate chance to maybe beat him. There we go. Dan the Great.
By the way, I'm going to let you know, you're probably going to need to take a golf cart from the baseline to the chair in between games. Just let you know.
There's a difference between golf shape and tennis shape, and I am certainly not in tennis shape right now.
Yep. Have you
checked, but this is an outdoor court, right?
Yeah.
I hope not. Is it outdoor? We're playing outdoors. Yeah.
Bro, I am
so screwed.
That's what I'm saying. You're 3 points, you're gonna be done.
I am so screwed. We're playing outdoors.
Now listen, I can't play in the
what South day are we Florida doing this? The 20th?
Thursday.
I don't know what I'm gonna do.
Let me check the old.
I'm gonna have to eat really good.
I already checked the forecast, like 93 degrees and
stuff. All right, Jamie, next week I'm gonna be in the office, which I'm excited about getting to see all you guys. I'm sure we'll go out to a lunch at some point. Let's make it salads and stuff. I gotta be really careful next week.
You're gonna get 61%
chance of rain on Thursday.
How much?
Ooh, that's not good.
61%.
But that's Florida, isn't it? Always 60%.
Oh, that's bad.
Why? Isn't it always like that in Florida?
61% means 90.
Really? But at what time?
4 o'clock. Always 4 o'clock.
No. We'll be fine.
It always rains at like 11 o'clock, I feel like.
We'll be fine. I thought we were playing indoors in like a cool
indoors arena. Why would you come down here to play indoors?
It's Florida in the middle of August.
There really are no indoor courts, but indoor courts get even hotter than outdoor. You don't have to deal with the sun. But
you're right. That indoor court experience last year was one of the hot. I've never played in anything like that last year when we played that match. Jamie said it best on air, I think, with Heath. He thought I might die in that second set. I was very close to collapsing on the court, which is an insane thing as a 35-year-old to collapse on the court.
Weigh-ins. Yeah, I don't think so.
Oh, we should do live weigh-ins. I do not. I know it's disgusting where I'm at right now, and it's crazy. Last year I did such a good job.
I gotta go.
Before we go, we have Jamie, you're going to be there, and Heath, or not Heath, I know, and Dave, correct?
Yeah, but I really got to go.
I'll be there, yeah.
And I want you both as line judges for this match.
I'm commentating.
I think if they're watching and
I need line judges for this match.
I think that we can appeal to them. Like, we make our own calls.
No, I want line judges for this match.
No, Dan, they're not tennis players. Like, they're going to get things wrong. Like, okay. You need experience doing
it. What are we, idiots?
No, you need experience. Like, seeing the ball, like, just barely scrape over the line.
I've written about professional tennis in my life.
Jamie can spot a line. I think he's got eyes.
You need experience. You want to throw rookies out there. All right,
let's get some FFT listeners to come up and be line judges.
Again. You can call him all the things you want. Don't be an asshole to me.
Oh, dude.
Nice. Well done, Jamie. Make his life harder in the editing room post show. I love it.
We'll talk to you later on Fantasy Football Today. Thanks, everybody.
Paramount Podcasts.
Sunday, the NFL on CBS is back with an electrifying Week 1 doubleheader. I'll see you on Sunday. The early slate features Josh Allen and the Bills taking on C.J. Stroud and the Texans in Houston. Then, it's a classic NFC North battle as Jordan Love and the Packers visit the Vikings.
It's a touchdown!
It all kicks off at noon Eastern with the NFL Today, live in Minnesota. See you Sunday with the NFL on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.